Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's Mesa City Council study agenda for May 13th, 2010. I'd like to excuse Councilmember Dennis Kavanaugh, who's out of town, and I guess the Vice Mayor is just running a little bit late this morning. So we will, by the way, since he's not here, when he does walk in, since it is his birthday, teach him to be late, won't we? So wherever we are, we will break into spontaneous whatever.
Song,
yeah.
You shall lead.
I shall lead. I will lead, okay? And do you after we do this, think he'll ever be late for a meeting?
Never.
Never, okay, good. Yeah, just not near his birthday.
Okay.
Turn off the lights, hurry! You know, this council would never pull a prank such as that, like have somebody walk in and nobody's in here, and then they like walk in with bow ties or something. That would never happen.
Oh, it's not him. It's another.
All right. The first item on the agenda is to review the agenda for next Monday's council meeting. Page 2. Page 3.
Excuse me, Mayor. You went.
There's no excuse for you, Councilmember Higgins.
Oh,
you said excuse me.
Was that very nice? That wasn't very nice, Mayor. I'm so offended.
One
this
of these
morning.
Days, we will elevate and graduate from grade school. But go ahead, Councilmember Higgins.
I have a question on item 3B, and I guess it goes to the city engineer. I wondered. I thought the report was kind of interesting, and I have a question. What I wondered in the fiscal impact statement, it says the Town Center Improvement District will be assessing 552 parcels. Is the city-owned property included in that? And I know you say there's six that we lease, so I'm not talking about those. I mean all the city property.
Good morning, Mayor, Councilmember Higgins. Yes and no.
Okay.
There are some city properties that are included because we lease them and the cost is passed through to the lessee. But at the time that the agreement and the decision was made to do the Downtown Association many years ago, the agreement was that the city parcels would not be assessed.
Okay. And so we do assess ourselves somehow. But that's another discussion for another day, I'm sure. But
yes.
All right. But there is some formula that how many parcels the city has and how we assess ourselves. I mean, it's some formula, I'm guessing.
Good morning, Mayor and Councilwoman Higgins. What the statute says is that when the district is formed, the municipality can make a choice about whether or not its particular parcels are assessed. And so how the formula works is all the parcels that are assessed are costs are spread across the parcels that are assessed based on the percentage of benefit.
So the 552 are all privately owned except the six that we lease out to somebody else.
That's correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Councilman Richens.
Just wanted to throw a quick comment. You know, as we do this assessment every year, the assessment goes to an organization that is responsible for really doing a lot in our downtown, keeping it clean, safe, parking. And there's been a lot of tension amongst groups down there. And it's going to be difficult to continue to even support an assessment period if those groups don't get their differences worked out. I just want to put them on notice at this point that it's everybody needs to get on the same page down there. We have such a great thing going downtown, finally, after a lot of years of trying, that the little infighting and stuff, I think it just needs to stop. And I just wanted to use this agenda item to get on my soapbox and say, come on, guys, let's get together, quit worrying about the kingdoms, and work together and continue to the momentum of our downtown. Just want to make that comment.
Thank you. Councilmember Summers.
Just so folks don't think that Dave Richens is on his own, I will concur with his comment, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Now we will welcome Vice Mayor Kyle Jones
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday,
dear Vice Mayor Kyle Jones.
Happy birthday to you.
At this point, we don't think about those
things. Okay. I'd like to chastise the crowd. If you break out like that once again, I will call over. I can't believe you did that to the Vice Mayor. I would have never allowed that, Kyle, if I had any control over this. Okay. We'd like to welcome Supervisor Brian Martin from Pinal County, who we'll get to in just a minute. Welcome, Supervisor Martin. And anything else on page two? Page three? Page four?
Mayor?
Councilmember Higgins?
I just had a question on item 5A. I got an email from one of my residents, and he's just concerned that the Siemens equipment we ordered isn't as new as we think it is, and I just wondered if you could explain why the quote was just for that specific brand and not anybody else, and I'm sure you guys have great reasons. So.
Dale Shaw will answer most of those questions, but we've gone through an internal process. We have a staff member on board who was specifically hired to do this transition for us, for the technology, has done these implementations, has worked with all the systems. Did a very thorough evaluation of all the alternatives, and Dale can give you some new information about Siemens and the quality and the feature set, and it is actually very, very new.
Yeah, in fact, I'll add that the Siemens product is being recognized in the industry as an innovative product that is advanced compared to the rest of the solutions in the industry.
Thank you. Councilmember Summers?
Thank you, Mayor. I was going to step back to item 4D and point out that, and I might be pronouncing this wrong, it's a liquor license application for Contigo Peru, fine Peruvian cuisine.
Close enough.
And it seems, I recall a Arizona Republic article about 2 weeks ago giving it 4 out of 5 stars, get really rave reviews. I want to just bring that out just to point out that we do have some pretty good eats here in Mesa. So, other than that, we can keep it on the consent.
Other than that? Have you ever had fine Peruvian cuisine?
Never. I'm gonna.
It's fine. As long as they don't have any chuño, I'm fine. Yeah, we won't explain what chuño is. That is not part of the fine Peruvian cuisine, but it's dehydrated potatoes that they do up on the Altiplano, and we won't get into that. Okay, anything else on page 4? Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Page 8. Mr. Brady.
Mayor, and maybe if you want to just cover page 9, we can come back to item 7K,
we'll
and then we can. I'm not sure if Michelle or the supervisor, both of them maybe want to come up and share. There's a brief presentation and share some comments with us about the process.
Anything on page 9?
Okay. So maybe we should, both of you want to come on up and have a seat here?
Brian, Supervisor Martin.
May you introduce yourselves?
Good morning, Mayor Smith and council members. My name is Michelle Fiaui. I'm here representing the Citizens for Santan Valley Incorporation. And what I'm here for is to basically present what our efforts are out there, kind of explain where we're coming from, give a brief synopsis of what we're doing out there to preclude what we will be coming to present to you on May 17th meeting. Also to answer any questions that you may have of our group or of our efforts or anything of that nature. So, let's see here. Supervisor Martin, did you have anything to say?
Just
Mayor, City Council, good morning. 7:30 in the morning. God bless you all.
you're not going to make our meetings that early, are you?
No, I hope not to. I'll leave it to the big boys here in Mesa. I'm not here in an official capacity relative to Pinal County. I'm here representing to answer questions that might come up and demonstrate the support of the citizens, my constituents, and their desires at this point. So,
and maybe we can give a little bit of a background as to why we are
right.
Why the Mesa City Council has any interest in the incorporation of Santana.
Sure. And I think the easiest way is the map that the council has in front of you.
Maybe we need to tell people why under state
we're required to give our approval consent for the incorporation of a city within 6 miles of our city limits, and we just happen to be at the corner of Germain and Meridian, which looks like it's almost within
it's right at the top of that corner. It's about a mile away.
So as such, then, those who are seeking incorporation, at least the initiation of that, have to go and get a approval by the jurisdictions, the municipalities in that area, of which we are one, and that's why this item is then on council's agenda for consideration.
Okay.
That's a pretty kind of short and quick of it, but Michelle, maybe you can explain a little bit more.
That's very good. Chris, I probably could leave now.
Michelle, we're proud of him, too.
Are you? I think we should bust out in song for him. He does. All right. Basically, what we are as a political action committee forms really a grassroots effort to basically incorporate as a result of us having a desire for self-determination and to begin basically just the incorporated types of benefits that come from gathering together and doing this. And we have a community of a little over 80,000 citizens. This would be the largest incorporation effort in the state of Arizona, as that is just huge, over 80,000. What are we now? Well, we're basically an unincorporated area of Pinal County. We have a limited amount of services, and as seen in these bullet points here for you, and what we're looking for is to become that incorporated municipality and have these increased and intensified services as listed there. And basically, just again, some demographics for you, a little over 80,000. Average age of 32, variety of ethnic backgrounds. Young families are out there, exemplified through, I gave just three of the school's enrollments out there, and which kind of gives you an idea of where it is that we're coming from and the kind of services that we are looking to have. And to have those services, as you all know, one needs to begin as an incorporated area, and that's what we're looking to attain. The proposed boundaries that you have are, I believe you've been distributed the map and the legal description. Just some information. You can find us at our website, santanvalleynow.com. Our emails are info@santanvalleynow.com. Our mission basically is to support municipal incorporation by educating the citizens of Santan Valley so that a decision will be made by a sanctioned vote. I am going to glaze over our purpose and message here to kind of highlight a few other pieces. I'd like to introduce just the names and a little bit about our committee leaders, which would be Randy Lochner. He is the chairman of this group, along with John Pardue as the treasurer. Myself, Michelle Fiaui, which I think I'd like to quiz you and have you say my last name five times really fast.
We'll stick with Michelle.
Okay. Rhett Homan is in charge of canvassing. John Atkins in charge of campaigning. Mr. Kevin Wall over events. And Motlock over volunteers. And Tom McPeak. Now, if they were all here this morning, you would be able to kind of see and learn. They come from very various diverse backgrounds. And what we really appreciate about our group is that we do represent a large, varying portion within each of us, of each part of the community. One of the things that we actually are quite excited about are some of our upcoming community panel discussions, which you have some information for on there. And really what this has to do is kind of extending the efforts to educate the people out there, provide them with the information that they need from the experts that provide them in those areas. We have varying topics of general incorporation information, economic development, transportation, planning and zoning. Those first four are planned, actually confirmed. The following two are kind of in the works. But what this will do, I think, is highlight our efforts in providing them with a well-rounded education of the benefits and trials of what we believe will happen as a result of incorporation, and affording them the opportunity for an educated and informed vote, which is what we're trying to do, is basically get to the point of getting all the resolutions taken care of for each of the neighboring cities within 6 mile radius so that we're able to put this on the November ballot. That's why I'm here this morning.
You have, looks like here, Mesa, Queen Creek, and Florence are the incorporated cities that would fall within that 6 miles.
Mesa, Queen Creek, Florence, Coolidge.
Coolidge also?
Yes, and Gilbert.
And Gilbert falls in.
Yes.
So far, have any of those other towns and cities taken action on your request for consent?
Yeah, well, you would be the first.
Okay.
We're on the agenda. We're planning. Well, actually, we have a work session planned with Florence the same evening that we're here with you, which would be next Monday evening. We're working with Gilbert to get on their agenda for this month, which should be a May 25th agenda item, which is what we're trying to do. We're working with Colin DeWitt and their council on that, and working with Bob Flatley out in Coolidge, and Himanshu Patel and their council out in Florence. So okay. It's going nicely.
Good. Okay.
All right. Can I answer any questions from anyone
Councilman
here?
Councilman Fenter.
Thank you. With regard to Magma Gas Company, and maybe this is for our city attorney, future needs for operating licenses, conveyance, or right-of-ways, how does that impact us as far as being one of the largest providers of natural gas down there?
Councilmember Fenter, I'd have to look into that, but I certainly can and get back to you by Monday.
I'm sure it's all going to work out fine. It'd be nice to have some of those questions, and hopefully goodwill and, you know, best of wishes for you if this all works out well. Thank you.
Well, right, that's a great question. Right now, do we have a franchise agreement with anyone, Pinal County, or as a municipal, do we need a franchise agreement, or how does that work?
We don't have a franchise agreement currently in that area. We purchased that gas utility back in the 80s, 70s. So it's in the right of way. I don't know that that's something we can explore, but I don't know that that's going to be anything significant. Southwest Gas, who operates in our city, doesn't currently have an active franchise agreement, by the way.
Let them dig it up, I guess. Okay. Well, interesting. I guess that all these are county roads, and that just doesn't automatically revert over to a city on incorporation, does it?
They do, Mayor.
They do, Mayor.
They used to. We changed the Queen Creek, solved that one.
Okay.
Yeah, you're not allowed to leave the roads in the county within the boundaries.
Well, that's right. Queen Creek got really hit with Prop 400 and stuff because they were all county roads. I remember that.
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
Or got left out.
Yeah, that became a problem.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Councilmember Summers.
More of a strategic question. There's been a, maybe Supervisor Martin, you could answer this best. There's been a lot of activity, particularly on the business community, but state planning as well, for Superstition Vistas and creating a future for a corridor, really, between Mesa and almost down to Tucson. This new city would be in the heart of that. What involvement have you had and the other folks who would incorporate this into the creation of the Superstition Vistas vision? And one of the key issues is concern over governance and what they want to try to avoid are the annexation fights of the 1980s that occurred in the rest of the valley, and we still feel some of that. I think part of the problem with Luke Air Force Base and the fight over there with El Mirage has more to do with their inability to expand as it is anything else, and that was because of aggressive annexation. So how does this fit into that? How does this new community fit into the governance of the Superstition Vistas area and help complement that?
Councilman Summers, I currently sit on the Superstition Vistas Planning Board. This particular area is not inside the 275 square miles that make up the Vistas. Although they will have an impact on the future of that community, it doesn't impact the overall plans that have been worked on by East Valley Partnership, Rock and Company, as they move forward there. But there's no doubt you will have annexation fights with or without Santan Valley. Everybody looks to the big gorilla named Mesa as they look to the east. But no, to answer your question,
That's the sun's gorilla.
That would be the
right?
sun's gorilla, of course. So.
I forgot to bring my broom for the city manager.
I knew I forgot something today.
But no, at this point, no. This is off the radar relative to Vistas. It just happened to not be all that state trust land. So.
Okay. Well, I hope we can avoid those fights in the future, as future generations and future leaders of all these communities, that we can break the old mode and actually try to think truly regionally, because the potential for this area to have upwards of 1 million people in it, not just this city but the entire region, the opportunity for new transit lines and job opportunities, we could destroy a lot of that by petty self-interests and bickering at a city level. So hopefully that we can all come together in this community too in some ways, because you're not in that area, but you're closer to the area than the rest of us. You very well may have to be leaders in that effort. So I will be in support of this. I know Supervisor Martin and Michelle, you've done a lot of work. I owe Michelle an apology, Mayor. I was here a little earlier when this presentation was being laid out, and I was joking with staff that, oh, heck no, we're not supporting this. And the look on her face, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. No, you don't understand my sense of humor. It's bad. So my apologies.
We can all attest for that.
Yes,
by the way.
Yes, he can.
Councilmember Summers, though, I have seen you on TV. I do understand.
Oh, okay. I like her. You saw me on there.
I will entertain a motion to agree with Ms. Michelle. Unanimous.
Second. And to clarify, our city manager came from San Antonio.
Yeah.
So.
I have converted.
Well, they all convert after a 4-0 sweep, of course. One item I'd like to bring up, this was discussed at our last MAC executive, and you know, it's interesting that at 80,000, if this incorporation is successful, you'd be one of the larger cities, not only in Pinal County but in the entire Phoenix metro area. You'd be bigger than Avondale, or about the same size, bigger than Litchfield, bigger than Goodyear, communities such as that. And even though this is in Pinal County, certainly it's part of the greater Phoenix metro area, and you know, many of the issues that we deal with at MAG directly impact you, and you directly impact them. And I would hope that you, as you move toward a corporation, that one of the main issues that the leaders have, and if you are successful, is active participation. Apache Junction is a member of MAG. It's an issue that... I don't know why, but gets people excited, because you are in Pinal County, and I guess they're in denial that somehow the Phoenix metro area and all our transportation, other issues and pollution and things stop at Meridian. I can't figure that one out. We know they don't, and I appreciate the efforts to pull something together, because I think you'll be much stronger and have a much greater voice as an incorporated entity than as the county. Whose interests are, of course, dispersed throughout the entire Pinal County. But that's an issue that we have to deal with, and I think that we've been in, not ignoring it, but have not come to grips with the reality that, you know, Maricopa and Pinal's futures are really tied together. And I know in Pinal County, Supervisor Martin, you've worked diligently on really bringing that to the forefront. I know that in Maricopa, in some areas, we're a little bit late in arriving and not recognizing that this is important. This is a big deal. I know the people in Queen Creek, Gilbert, Mesa, we get it because, you know, we have daily interaction with the people in out in that area. I know it well. I've built several homes in Santan Valley, so I know the area very, very well. So I wish you luck in your efforts and hope that this, one way or another, this will be the beginning of a great interaction and cooperation, because we need you at the table. One way or another, we need you at the table.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for
coming.
Thank you so very much for being here. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Anything else on the agenda? Next item.
Little item.
We'll skip two and go to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the fiscal year 10-11 preliminary budget. You have 3 minutes.
Mayor and Council, we have today you will be receiving the preliminary budget and capital improvement program. We have copies of these here in the chambers today. We're not going to go through it page by page right now. But so if you'd like a copy, we can bring them to the dais. Otherwise, we can deliver them to your offices. But we do have them here in the chambers. But this is what they look like. So you'll be getting these today. Let me just really what I wanted to do today is establish that today is pursuant to the charter, the city manager is presenting the preliminary budget to the city council. And I just kind of want to go through this PowerPoint just quickly to kind of highlight for the council some of the items that are included in the proposed budget. And first of all, let me just express thanks first to the council, the mayor and the council. We've been at this pretty consistently a couple times a week, some very long meetings for the last couple of months going through the proposed budget. Appreciate your patience, appreciate your feedback, which has been very important to us as we've developed the proposed budget during this period of time. I also want to thank city staff for their efforts in working very diligently and putting together these proposals to the city council. This is not easy. I think even though, you know, a year and a half ago we had to cut $60 million, you know, cutting another $24 million doesn't make it that much easier. It becomes more difficult each time as we have to look at making some very difficult decisions as we try to continue to deliver quality services, our core services to our community. We have employees who very much care about Mesa and what we can provide for quality of life to our residents. Faced, though, with the challenges of this difficult economy, and really, if council recall, we took the approach that not only we're just looking at next year, but we're really trying to put in place a budget that, based on what we know today, based on the forecast we have today as far as our revenues and what we know as far as possible needs as far as services or expenses that may arise over the next 3 to 4 years, we put together a plan that would address that. So on slide two, this is just, again, kind of a summary to the council. The majority of these departments have already made it, made the presentation to the city council. What you have seen to date and what's included in the proposed budget are reductions. It's a combination of both reductions in some revenues, specifically in transit. If you recall, we had higher ridership and the fare box had increased, and so those dollars are included in the totals here of what you've seen. Those details are in the proposed budget, but there's about $17.3 million that we've presented to the council over the last couple of months of reductions towards meeting our goal of balancing the budget. What that means impact-wise, you can see in the next slide as far as positions, and this is where it gets very difficult in these decisions because, as we've shown in the past, over 70% of our expenses are related to personnel. We are a service industry. We provide those services with great people delivering them. what we've, as the last couple of weeks, that we've been able to assess the positions that are being cut, we estimate today, based on where we are, what we know today and working with our employees, there will be about 22 individuals that will be will go through the reduction in workforce with the city. So there's 22 of those filled positions that will be reduced by July 1st. Another 45 of those positions are being eliminated, but they're being done through attrition so that they're being planned as part of a retirement package, or someone who's planning on retiring. Those positions will be reduced over a period of time, not necessarily before July 1st, but during the next fiscal year. And then the balance of the positions to get to our 90 FTEs, 91 FTEs, are vacant positions. So that's kind of the breakdown of how that will work.
Councilmember Summers?
Yeah, I was waiting to see. I thought you might get to it. Maybe you did. My question is how we're going to handle layoffs, or how you're going to handle layoffs, because you're the through personnel. Are we going to be able to attrition out all the positions, or how many positions do you estimate we're going to have to? Is it 22?
That's the 22.
We're going to have to lay off 22 people.
22 of the 90 or so budgeted positions will impact 22 individuals as far as losing their jobs to the city.
How do we determine who those 22 are? Is that done by seniority?
There's a process that we have followed for the last, unfortunately, we've done this now for 5 years.
Experience. What is that process?
And it allows, and I'll make sure I say this right, but we identify the positions, the budgeted positions are being reduced.
Right.
We then go through a process of identifying all the positions that individual may be qualified for. Gary, why don't you just go ahead and jump in there? Because it's limited to within a department and seniority based along the way.
Yeah, good morning, Mayor Smith, Councilmember Summers. Our layoff process really is primarily driven by seniority. About 75% is based on seniority, and about 25% is based on performance. So the first thing the departments have to do is decide, in order to meet their budget reduction threshold, they need to decide how many positions are going to be reduced. They really don't necessarily identify any one particular individual. They're just identifying how many positions within a classification would need to be reduced in order to meet that budget reduction. Once we receive that, it comes to Human Resources, and then we do what's referred to as a retention point calculation. And that's where we run retention points of all employees citywide, and we assign them a retention score that's based upon their seniority and their performance. So
are they aware of this number?
Yes.
Once you've run that list,
Yes. Okay. Most of the 22 employees that the city manager is referring to has already received some notice of that. In the end, it may not be exactly that individual, but they have been identified and been told that their position is under consideration. Now, also as part of our reduction in force process, certain individuals within job families will have bumping opportunities. So if you have a higher retention score than somebody else within your job family, that individual would have an opportunity to potentially bump somebody out with a lower retention score. So at the moment, what we have done is we've run retention scores for all of the departments. We know who the individuals are that are being impacted, and we've also identified who has those bumping rights. Those individuals will then have an opportunity to decide whether or not they want to participate in that bumping process, or do they simply want to just take the severance package.
And you contact all the employees about bumping opportunities. Is there an opportunity for them to contest their score, if you will, about their...
Well, we can meet. We share that with them. If someone has questions, we explain the process. A pretty empirical process.
Very quantitative.
Yeah.
You can show them what
the
numbers are.
We can show them start dates and things. Now,
okay.
Once we've done that, that's really just the beginning, because, one, we do have a severance package that we do offer to our employees, and that's consistently been the consistent formula for a long time. One of the things we offer to is Human Resources will offer to these same employees any job placement assistance, helping with resumes. We actually have a group of Gary's folks who will specifically be able to sit down and make that available to our employees to assist them in the transition. We also, I provide a letter for those employees if they so wish, and I did several of these last time, which if they are out seeking employment, it's a letter that represents from me that the reason that these individuals are no longer working for the city, it had nothing to do with performance or anything they did, but it had to do with our workforce and reduction because of our economic status. So at least that they have an explanation, so that takes that away, why they're no longer employed. We also put them on a 24-month what's the list? What do we call it?
It's a reduction in force list that's available for about 2 years, and they get primary opportunities to be placed.
If another position comes open
like
in the
recall
city.
Recall list.
Yeah. Recall, yes. That's the recall. Yeah. So for 24 months, we allow them that if other positions come available somewhere else in another department in the city, then we can call them up immediately, and we can get them right into that position. So we try to do everything we can to either make the transition as easy as possible, but we also have to take the opportunity that if something comes up, we can get them back into the organization. And I know that's happened quite a bit over the last couple of years.
Are there any vacancies in the city right now that some of those 22 folks might be able to fill? Because there are critical vacancies. So,
and that's part of the process we go through in evaluating. But the first assessment is really done within that specific department. We don't allow for these bumpings to take place across departments throughout the city.
Okay, gotcha.
You can't, if you're an administrative assistant in one department, you can't bump somebody out who has lesser seniority in another department somewhere else. But if there's a vacancy in another department that's similar to the one you are vacating, then certainly we look to try to place those.
Okay, thank you for the explanation.
And as a follow-up, something that's really important to me but a little less tangible is some of these efforts involve privatization, and what I think is really important is working with whomever we're going to contract with to make sure that there's a priority given there. So I know it's difficult to mandate, but we should be able to use.
It's something that I know that we're working with those contractors, and I can think of one.
Yeah, I would. It would be great if that would be an item in the request proposal. They do give preference to existing city employees. Mm-hmm. I think that's the least we can do on that.
We can do that.
Thank you for bringing that up, Councilor Fenter. Okay.
Okay. So if we'll go to slide 4, again, we've mentioned that the estimated budget gap is $24.5 million. With the budget reductions of 17.3, that left us a remaining gap of $7.2 million. Obviously, what we're seeing most of our challenges in this last year have been related to the economic impact of a down economy. But some interesting things have been happening in the last few months that we'd like to share with council as far as us giving us a little optimism about where we stand today as far as sales tax receipts and generally the economy in Mesa. So if we could go to the next slide. Now, this is a challenge for us because typically when we all went to school and we learned how to read bar charts and graphs, usually we were talking about above the line, mm-hmm. above the x-axis. But here we are below the x-axis, below zero. We're coming up with new themes such as on our way to zero, we embrace zero, trying to get back to 0% because right now everything we're doing, for example, even from last year's historic low years in collections, we estimated that our collections would be 8% down from even last year, 8% below. What this chart shows you, the lighter color, I don't know what color it is up there, but the lighter color is the monthly collections, and it's a comparison to the same year or same month a year ago as a percentage of where it fell comparative to the year before. So, for example, the June bar chart suggests to us that the June receipts for this fiscal year were more than 12% less than they were for the prior year. And that's consistent, that light color is that's the same thing it represents. For example, in September, which was a very difficult year apparently for month, it was down 16% from the month prior. What the black bars do is begins to track the cumulative impact of collections through the whole year. So as you can tell, we were very concerned about, let me back up, and then we had projected that the receipts for this year, for this fiscal year that we're currently in, would be 8% less than last year's, and that's where you see that 8%, you see that bar, that line going across, trying to show where we had estimated in our budget.
Yeah, so in deriving your revenue numbers, the assumption you
was based
used
off of that
sales
negative
tax 8%. Would be down 8%.
Down 8%. Okay. So for June, obviously, it was worse than that. For July, August, it was about right on, well, sorry, July was actually a very good month. It was below 4%. August was about a little over 8%. September was a very difficult month, 6% below. So you can see there was a lot of fluctuations in what we were seeing. But beginning in that October timeframe, you begin to see that each month from that point forward was below the 8% comparative from the prior year, the month of that year was below the 8% goal. And especially we see in February, March, significant.
Let's use 8% goal, estimate.
Estimate, sorry, what's the goal? Our goal is zero.
Remember, we're embracing zero.
Yeah, no, that's right, going to zero, thank you. Right.
All right, that might be a good campaign slogan.
Embracing zero?
Embracing zero.
I have my own.
Oh, okay.
So, I can't repeat it.
The good news here, what we want to, I guess, point out to the council is because that dark bar number, which is a cumulative number, which represents the total collections through the year, as you see that bar in March is now an improvement from the 8%. We are now at about 6.8%, and that's with now 10 months of collections. Which is where we want to be in our estimates. We want our estimates to be a little conservative and collections be a little improved, which they are. But even that slight difference is significant for the city as far as retail sales. With 10 months of history and only 2 months remaining of collections, we feel comfortable now to step out or come out and revise our estimates. And so we are suggesting that number, we can now improve what we had estimated for our sales tax collections to a little over $3 million. So that's $3 million that we weren't planning on in our budget or forecast that we believe will now be available for us at the end of the year. So that's the good news. And to kind of strengthen that position, if you'll just go to continue with me on slide 6, that is a bar chart. It's interesting. We were just kind of looking at what March, the month of March means in Mesa. March is a very significant month for us. And we see a lot of activity taking place. At the airport, this past March was the busiest month for the year, not beating out Novembers and Decembers, and as you can tell, was also the busiest March they've ever had at the airport. We are having about 45,000 people coming through that airport at that. So it's a significant time for us. Obviously, we have a lot of other activity, which you can see in slide 7, where you see the improvement in the bed tax collections, and for the first time in a long time, the month-to-month comparison from the prior year, we have March, which is actually, in their case, they've crossed over zero. They saw an improvement from the prior year month, or prior year March. We take this as a good sign that maybe we've bottomed out. It looks like we're seeing some improvement. Again, I could point out, too, that during March, Cactus League and certainly the Cubs saw a continued great success in attendance at here in Mesa. Obviously, that brings in significant revenues for us. March is one of what maybe the second or third highest sales tax collection months for Mesa. And so it's no coincidence that the Cactus League activity has a significant impact in Mesa. So what we're suggesting in slide 8 is a variety of approaches to fund the gap, to address the $7.2 million gap. As I mentioned before, we're prepared to update our revenue projections based on the actual receipts we received to date. And that you'll see that in the next slide, what that amounts to about $3.2 million. We're also proposing that as a result of the interest cost savings from our bonds, as well as being able to our construction cost on projects that were funded by the bonds, we haven't had to sell as much of the bonds early on. We've been able to spread out those costs over a period of time, which has resulted in some savings. We talked about this before about the average tax bill. If we maintain the average tax bill at about $2 less than what we had established or indicated when we did this, the election, which was at 6252, if we take that down by about $2, and that's $2 a year, it's $2 for the average residential property taxpayer in Mesa for the secondary property tax. If we reduce that to two, we still will collect about $1.3 million that we can use to apply against a secondary property, or against our general obligation debt, that will free up about $1.3 million. Obviously, as we use these dollars from the secondary property tax to pay down debt, that frees up the pressure on the general fund to fund that outstanding debt.
Councilmember Summers.
Help me understand this. What is a dollar on the tax rate mean into the general fund per Dodge? Because I want to know, I mean, $2.
Incrementally, what's that $2?
Yeah, $2 in a tax.
If we left it flat, what would it be?
It was about $250,000, $300,000.
So if we left it flat, that number would be $1.6 million, not $1.3 million. Or
$1.5 million.
Okay.
Well, it's not a lot of money. I mean, $2. I can't buy this coffee for $2, and it just on an average, on my average tax bill, it's not a heck of a lot of money. And $300,000, I suppose, in the overall budget's not a lot of money. But police are taking a significant hit, and I'm concerned about how officers are going to be shifted around. Fire prevention is going to lose a lot of folks. We're losing two arson investigators out of that group, and a fire protection engineer. Those are important folks and skill sets that are going to be gone in transit. I know some of the things that I've listed off are far more than $300,000, but it's $300,000 keeping things flat. Mm-hmm. Which are what the voters approved. It's $300,000 that we may be able to preserve something.
And that would
everyone understands.
We agree. So that would be something the council.
And I think Councilmember Summers makes a great point. And that's, let's get through the presentation. We'll have a chance over the next few weeks before we discuss agree on the budget to decide what we want to do on this. One thing I'd like to caution everyone on is that it's always easy in a billion-dollar budget to point, if we do this, we can do that. And we need to remember that there's a lot of $200,000 needs out there that we can't look at the last one or the one that seems to stick out the most, because I'd like to caution against attaching a specific idea with a specific need, because these needs are citywide. I mean, we could make it every department comes in here with critical needs, and they're all worthy of funding. I mean, that's the dilemma we have, is that you could have a list of rate them 1 through 10, and they'd all be 1A. So let's get through this, and I think you make a great point. I'm sorry, what?
The fire trucks are cool.
Okay.
Not when they're white.
Okay. So what we're saying, though, is that what we've seen is what staff is recommending is that if we reduce the tax bill by $2, even with that, it'll still produce an additional $1.3 million because of the savings and the other things that we've been able to generate from our bond financing program.
Right.
Okay. And we know that if we left it the same now, that number may be another couple, $200,000 to $300,000.
$250,000.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Then we've updated our impact fee revenues adjustment. We had really scaled that back. And even though our construction activity is significantly low, there's still enough activity out there that's continuing to generate about $1 million a year in impact fee revenue, which then goes directly to paying down the outstanding GO debt that's paying for those facilities like fire stations and police substations, parks, and libraries. So those impact fees have a direct impact on the outstanding debt.
On the debt service.
Debt service, correct.
So if the impact fees, you in your budget estimated the impact fees would not come in, which means we'd have to basically take sales tax revenue to pay that debt, to cover that debt service. If what you're looking at now is you're saying, construction activity is still bad, but it's a little bit better than we thought, So if we're adjusting our estimate, which means that the impact fees, we anticipate there will be $1 million in impact fees that will come in. Therefore, we will not have to redirect sales tax revenue to cover that.
And the good news, we've already collected that to this year to date. We've already seen that.
So that's not a projection.
We've already seen that activity this year. We're estimating that if we can collect it this year, we'll be sure to collect it the following year. So a lot of these estimates, again, remember, we're 10 months into the fiscal year. We've already seen most of this already collected, and we're making this estimate based on that.
So it's a real stretch for you to estimate.
I know. We've really gone out there with 10 months of history.
Glad you've perfected your process well enough that you can project revenues that you've already collected.
I just want to be, you know, we're a little you know, aggressive around here, but we're trying to restrain ourselves. The adjustment to the year-end fund balance. The council had asked us to look at, we have the policy of maintaining fund balance between 8 and 10%. Which we have done in a very, I think, fine way over the last couple of years. We've looked at the possibility, recognizing that we're in some challenging times. It's been very difficult to take the reductions that we've had to take. And so we've looked at, in the forecasted period of time, keeping that fund balance, allowing that fund balance to fall below the 10%, but not below the 8.5%. And so maintaining that over the next 3 to 4 years, based on what we know today, and remember, we're just basing it on the forecast of revenues and expenditures. But by reducing that and not maintaining the 10% is the planned goal for every year out into the future, but allowing that to be less, but no less than 8.5%, that over that longer period of time, that allowed us to come up about $1 million more. That's not all just fund balance. I need to be careful that it includes also, we are seeing some savings in certain commodities and prices, so it's a combination. But certainly the majority of that is in our kind of a change in the shift of how we're establishing our fund balance out into the future. I think we'll be fine. We're certainly well within our goal that we had established, or our policy, sorry, that we have and what we've represented to our rating agencies. So we feel comfortable that we can take this $1 million and use this for our budget shortfall. And the last one, if you recall, we had the discussion that's in your rates and fees. We had talked about the fact that today all the utilities currently are charged a portion of a sales tax, or they're charged a sales tax, whether it's gas, electric, water. But we're not sure why, but historically we had not been charging the wastewater services the same fee. What we proposed to do in this year's budget, we had it scheduled, and we had planned on, and we're bringing to council about a 6.5% rate increase for wastewater, recognizing that if we wanted to do this fee, also the sales tax fee, which is close to 2%, what we've done is to accommodate our customers and concerned about that impact. We've recommended to the council a utility rate increase for wastewater of only 4.5%. But including this service fee, which is the same as we do for other utilities. So the net number is the same, but the difference is that this portion of the fee will go directly, will go to the general fund and as well as to the transportation fund, as all sales taxes do. But that generates about $700,000 to the city annually.
Let's back up. It generates $700,000. It's really more or less a redirection of funds, or is that 700,000 net new revenue?
Net new.
Okay.
And that is how we came up with the recommendation to close the gap at $7.2 million. Again, the most significant portion of that is the improvement in the economy.
If I could look at this, we have $24 million of a budget estimated budget, however you want to look at it. A shortfall. The departments have picked up about $17 million of that. Of the $7 million that staff, which left $7 million remaining to be covered. That's our net gap. What we're looking at is of these. As I look at these, there are
5.2 million are just based on improvements.
Are just based on change in estimates.
Right.
So it's purely a budget estimate.
So there's only about. There's about $2 million left.
Okay, $5 million. The wastewater service is actually a change in.
So the 1.3 and this, and I don't know how you want to count the 1.3, but
Because the 1.3 actually, in a normal world, you would say, here's what we're collecting on a secondary property tax, it'd be collected either way.
So only the $700,000 is the new.
Yeah. I'm missing something here.
No.
We're just making sure Alex is breathing.
Oh. Okay. Well, so what staff has done is that before, for example, we had talked about the potential.
As far as new revenue, I think it's fair to say that's the $700,000.
Yeah, because the $1.3 million, if we just left the tax collections
the same. It would be the same collections that we've been collecting the prior
right.
year. Yes.
Right, and you'd actually be $1.5 million, and so that number is...
So the $24.5 million gap, we're only talking about $700,000, really based on new fees or whatever you want to call it, that would help to close the gap.
Right. All the others are just budget gyrations. And I don't want to minimize that, but... That sounds bad, doesn't it? What I mean
is... No, there's improvements. A lot of them are just...
No, what I mean is a budget is a living, breathing thing. It's not static. And what you're saying is that in order to begin this process, you made certain assumptions and came up with certain numbers. And that's what our entire exercise has been based upon,
right.
is on these projections that were made based on this snapshot. That was what, 90, 120 days ago?
Oh, yeah. Well, yes.
Well, I mean...
Yeah, at least.
A year ago.
It
was based on January numbers.
Yeah.
So 120 days, 4 months ago,
sure.
we said, here's what we're going to use as our baseline budget numbers, and the world's changed since then.
Right.
And what you're saying is it's changed in ways, for example, our revenue seems to be improving because
right.
the economy seems to be improving.
Right.
Our impact fees definitely improved because
right.
we collected more money that we can apply.
And, Mayor, I know... This is kind of sensible, but the tax bill is also a result of the improved economy. We got lower interest rates because
right.
of the time we went into the market, and as a result of lower construction cost, we were able to do the same projects and do with less dollars that we had to commit early on. So, in effect, that 1.3 is also an impact of the economy.
Well, it is, but, I mean, we could collect the same amount of money, and that would have... You did not anticipate collecting the same amount of money when
correct.
You did your budget estimate because
correct.
You looked at actual costs for the debt service.
That's correct.
Rather than the tax bill that's being sent out to taxpayers.
Right.
Okay. And then the $1 million is the fund balance. As you said, it's a mix of not borrowing, but moving some from our reserves, and that's what reserves are for.
Yep.
To cover short-term falls, and we're hoping that when the economy recovers, after we replenish or take care of salary and other adjustments that were made, that we would... then the first thing we'd do is to replenish our reserves so that we have that, if you want to call it a rainy day fund, whatever, which is, that's what it acts for. That's one of the reasons it's there,
yep.
is so we can cover cover these kinds of gaps. Okay. Any questions?
Oh, yeah, no, let's. And then just quickly, just one more item on slide 11. As you recall, we had the goal of really trying to, based on what we know today, of trying to solve or at least balance the budget for the next 3 to 4 years. The decision, though, that we made on delaying the initiation of some of, this, of the bus, new bus routes resulted in some one-time savings for this next fiscal year. And certainly that helped us, and that's included in the $17.3 million that helped us to solve that. But it does put us in a position that in the following year, so a year from today, all things being equal and all our forecast numbers don't change, we would have about a $764,000 that we would need to identify to support the full year operations of those bus routes. Now, I'm not concerned about that. I'm not adding that. It's just something we need to be aware of. It's something on our tickler file. Certainly, if we end up the end of next year where our challenge is to find $764,000 total, we're going to be in good shape. We're also looking at the service models that we talked about for transit. That's just to make everybody aware of it. Everything else that we've done today has had a recurring, long-term effect. This is just the one that's just kind of sitting out there. I'm not concerned about it, but it's just something we all need to be aware of when it comes up next year's time.
Okay. And then the last... Again, that transportation is primarily a result of the state sweeping...
Absolutely.
All of our things in this. So they basically pulled the rug out from under our transit.
So that's just another, that's just an issue down the road, but.
They abandoned us.
They abandoned us.
They left us hanging.
Right. They left us on the platform.
That they did.
And then slide 12 gives the council a schedule. We're here today receiving the preliminary budget. The council will be establishing the tentative budget, the upper limits of the budget on the June 7th with the adoption on the 21st. So, Mayor and Council, if there's some interest in looking at some changes within this, we'll probably would probably be a good idea to do those prior to the June 7th meeting. So that we can make sure that we've accounted for those in that on the tentative budget adoption.
Okay.
Okay.
Councilmember Higgins.
I can ask a big general question. Last year, we cut $65 million and laid off like 350 people, ish. I don't mean to insult anyone who got laid off. I'm just
that's pretty yeah.
And this year we're reducing $17 million and we have to lay off 22 people. Where is all that other, you know, that ratio is way off.
Oh.
So where did all that other, how did we find all this extra money without laying off people?
No, the 300, the 60 to 340, recall, those are, is comparable to what we're doing today at 24 and a half to 91 positions. So there's 91 positions being eliminated. 22 are the one, after, some of those are 45, what did I say, 45 of those. Mm-hmm. Are going to be based on attrition. 22 are actually filled positions that will have to go through a reduction in workforce. And then the balance of those, whatever the 23, 24 of those, are vacant positions that exist.
Budgeted positions that are not filled.
Does that help?
So it's a similar ratio is what you're saying?
Yeah, and I want to be careful the ratio
know,
because sometimes
ish.
There are, I know, for example, in the police department, they took a large reductions based on reducing their fleet of vehicles. So it's not always a person per dollar
right.
translation, but I think if you look at that scale, it comes out pretty close.
Well, the 65 also, yeah. remember, was an 18-month rolling budget.
Yes, and the city attorney's also pointed out, I think last year when we did, the 300 ended up being, is Gary, how many actually did we, was it over 100?
We didn't lay off 300 people.
No, this position, that's more like the 91. But the 300 was about...
I think effective January 9th, we had 109 uh-huh. actual employees that received severance packages.
Okay. So that, the does that help?
Vacancies. Yeah, that helps a lot. A lot. Yeah, okay. Great. Thank
so,
you.
So that's where we stand, Mayor. We'll look forward to going forward from here.
All right. Well, you know, sort of mixed news. This has been miserable. I think everyone can agree to that. The economy has hit everybody in ways that I don't even know how to explain it. Everybody feels it, and this isn't fun. It's not enjoyable for anybody because you're talking about people. We're talking about citizens who are being put at risk at all levels because city services have been reduced, and you're talking about people who have jobs. And so I don't want to minimize the impact that we have. It's nice to hopefully see a light in the tunnel and think that it's not the freight train coming at you.
Yeah. Mayor, and quick, can I say something real quickly? I know you're trying to wrap this up. And one thing I failed to mention that I think it's very important. We've put this out on our webpage for employees, but because I know there was a lot of discussions going on. This budget does not include any furloughs, any across-the-board reductions in compensation for employees. None of that is included in here.
Right.
I just want to make that's one of those statements I need to make sure I say.
Straightforward. What has been presented by the departments and the
right
and city management as it relates to the remaining gap does not include any of those.
That's correct.
But it does include the layoffs,
elimination of
the attrition, and the non-filled or non-funded budget positions, I guess you would call them.
They're funded. They're vacant.
We're not going to fund them.
Right. In the future, they'll be eliminated.
Yeah.
Right.
So they're non-funded positions.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, if there is something good, and there was something good, is to see that, you know, it appears that there is a trend that the economy is if not bouncing back, has certainly stopped its free fall. And, you know, if that continues, then, you know, we'll hopefully have some good stuff to talk about.
Yeah, just to, you know, for council's purposes, what we're projecting for the next year, this following year, is that we hope to see what we've forecasted is about a 4.4% improvement from what we collect this year. Okay, what we forecast,
which is
this
still
year.
Way down,
still from what down, we still below zero. Yeah. If you would, but it's at least for the first time we're expecting a better year than the prior year, which is.
Well, I will say one thing, too. I've talked to a lot of mayors and been in a lot of presentations over budgets, and I think I'd like to commend the staff because I think our staff has taken a more, what I would call, not a more conservative, but a more realistic approach to our projections. And I think one of the reasons we have been able to deal with this very difficult situation as well as we have been able to is because we've at least, I think, had a better handle on what's going on. I know some other government entities and cities have their projections are so far off that they're really scrambling in two different ways. And as painful as it's been, at least I think we've been close to being on to what reality has been. So thank you at least for that, for making a lousy situation at least, you know, manageable. Councilmember Summers.
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah, we'll call them out. Chuck Odom and Brian Brains Rock. On their projections, solid work. Thank you very much. To throw a little cold water on this on the fire, the question I have is that we've done a pretty good job balancing our budget each and every year, and thanks to expert staff, we've been able to at least figure out where this ship is heading fairly accurately. The big question mark right now is the state. Even if the tax passes in less than a week, there's still $1.5 billion in the hole. Is that the somewhere around there?
I heard that number. I don't know what.
Yeah, that's if
that's
it passes.
Right.
Yeah, that's
about
right.
$1.5 billion in the hole. So what? They swept LTAF. What funds are left to sweep that is going to potentially or could potentially impact our budget? And have we been? I told you it was a cold bucket of water. So where? Hey, Scott. So what's left to sweep, and are we?
Don't give any ideas. Just
generally speaking, and what have we been projecting potentially the loss of that?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, there is always a creative approach to try to get forge revenue streams that ultimately flow to cities. Chuck,
I haven't even heard of Pete.
Right. I obviously, depending on the outcome of the state sales tax election on March 18th, will really set the tone for what other revenue sources, I'm sorry, May 18th, will really set the tone for what other types of additional revenue the state's looking to garner from others that are currently passed through. So we'll see how that turns out. But as of right now, shared revenue seems to be okay. They adjourned, which is always a good thing, and with no cuts to shared revenue that we'll be talking about next week at study session. But any of the other funds outside of that always get scrutiny, and we just have to do
well. But we don't really have any other funds outside of that that haven't been cut yet, do we?
That's my question.
All of them have taken various degrees of hits. HERF revenue this year did not get diverted to the extent that it has in some past years. So that's
now,
always
once again HERF acronym.
I'm sorry, highway user revenue fees,
which are used
for streets purposes.
So that's even though that's a general fund, it's a dedicated use, which is street maintenance.
That's correct, and I believe that statutorily it's limited for cities. I know in Mesa that's obviously how we do it.
What I'm trying to get to is if that were cut by the state, it would have a direct impact on our street maintenance, but would not have a direct impact on our on other general funds such as police, fire, libraries, that type of thing.
That's correct, Mayor.
As opposed to shared revenue.
Correct.
Which is direct into the general fund, which if that is cut by the state, first of all, you know, explain to them where we are. That's a statutorily, at least from the city standpoint, protected fund. That we believe that's our revenue that the state simply collects for us. And if the legislature delves into that, then we would certainly have some legal issues with that.
Shared revenue, fortunately, Mayor and Council enjoys voter protection, and we argued in court and were successful in our argument on behalf of the League of Arizona Cities and Towns in saying that it would require a two-thirds vote of the legislature in order to divert shared revenue. So we feel pretty good about where we stand with enough legislators to prevent that from occurring.
Okay. Councilman Richens.
Is there any direct impact to the city if the sales tax does not pass May 18th?
Mayor, Councilmember Richens, in the budget that was passed that had certain triggers depending upon the passage or failure of Prop 100 on May 18th, it did not include at that point any reductions in shared revenue to cities and towns.
So, but, I mean, to repeat, the legislature actually passed two budgets.
They did.
They passed one if Prop 100 passes, and they passed one if it doesn't pass.
Correct.
So that work supposedly has been done, but in either case, we're still billion plus dollars.
So there's still short. A balance.
Correct. Well, in theory, the cuts, Mayor, that the legislature lined up in case Prop 100 is not successful, should close the $1 billion shortfall that the state would face. But even yesterday, the governor stated publicly that if Prop 100 fails, that May 19th she'll be calling the legislature back into special session to address the budget. So obviously there were some cuts that were included in the budget that probably will not remain, and there will be other avenues, probably shared revenue, that are reexamined for possible cuts if Prop 100 is not successful.
All right. Anything else?
Another question, not for Mr. Butler, though, if that's okay. I was just reviewing in my mind the public safety presentations, and I thought that we had more like 40 real positions between police and fire that were being cut. Not 40 real people that were being laid off between police and fire-ish.
Those are the attrition positions that we're taking care of through next fall. We're not laying off any line-sworn positions.
So what they'll do is those positions are scheduled to be based on retirements. They know that they will be vacated, and so that may not necessarily happen before July 1st. It could be happening during the year. So we've allowed for those positions through attrition that those positions will be eliminated when they are when the person leaves them for retirement. Otherwise, I know, for example, in the police department, we're going to be working through probably in the next couple of months to try to place many of the positions related to
teleserve
individuals. So they're working very diligently to try to get those placed throughout their organization. So at least as of today, based on what we know, the number of positions that will be having to go out the door by July 1st is 22. The departments, especially I think police more than any other, will continue to work to try to place their individuals within their department. They may go extend beyond that July 1st time because there are specific skill sets. They may be able to get them in different locations, different areas within the police department. But as today, that's what we are estimating. There's 22, at least by July 1st, that will lose their positions. And remember, Councilor, there's vacant positions in that mix, too. And then I think the large portion of this is through attrition, that we know how many positions people are for retirements, and that really helps us out. And as a matter of fact, and we haven't brought this to Council yet, but we are also working on a plan through a voluntary
health benefit
plan that may also create a interest. Mm-hmm. Interest in individuals who are eligible to retire, that may also allow them to retire earlier. And what that would help us on a number of fronts would be is that those individuals who are eligible to retire today under the retirement system, that if they were to leave sooner in the next few months, that most of those are already at the top of their pay range, that by replacing them or filling that position again with another individual who's not eligible for retirement, who doesn't have as much time in the system, actually will get both the savings from their salary as most likely those same individuals are scheduled to receive stability pay. So we think that there could be some savings there for the city. We're having to work through that because we have to be very sensitive to the impact that it has with the retirement system. Other cities have done early retirement packages and then had to pay, I don't know, their penalties, but they've had to pay
present value of the
they got pleasant liability. Surprises.
They had pleasant surprises and impacts for their budget for doing that. So we're proceeding carefully. Actually, we think this is a very good plan that Mr. Raines has come up with, working with other staff, that we look like we're getting tentative approval from the retirement system. We're not ready to roll it out yet because we want to make sure that's all been vetted through before we make the announcement. And then it would be savings that would accrue to the departments over the fiscal year. And we can't, it's difficult today to estimate how many individuals would actually take advantage of that. So the idea is we would put it out there and then allow departments to take that benefit from that savings over time.
Okay. Councilmember Richens.
What would be the fiscal impact of suspending stability pay for a year? Not eliminating it, but suspending it for a year.
About $4.2 million.
What would be the legal ramification?
Mayor, Council,
let me put that on. I don't think that's on tape. I'm sorry. What would be the legal ramifications is what I said with this off. So
I would prefer to provide that in a confidential memo to you.
Or
an executive
or
session.
It's been
discussed as a elimination, but I don't know if it's ever been discussed as a one-year suspension due to budget issues.
We're in no way, shape, or form prepared to have this discussion, but if you could prepare an analysis.
We could do that, Mayor.
For the council. Okay, Councilmember Summers.
Chris, from what you laid out there with basically an early retirement, that's not really early
retirement. What we would do is set up we would contribute to a health reimbursement agreement. Essentially, where the city would contribute into these health savings accounts that would go in for that member, for the employee. And so it goes in, and then they can withdraw it for medical-related expenses, tax-free after retirement. So there's a significant benefit to them. Now, they would have to do it. They would have to obviously terminate with the city. We believe that we would limit it to those who are eligible to retire in the current system. We would make it that they would have to make that decision within a very specific time period to be eligible for it.
Which is why it's not a true early retirement.
Right.
Because they're already eligible. It may be early for their personal decision.
Right.
But they've already hit the
80 point
that you require. They could retire any day.
Correct.
But this is an incentive for them to say, hey, listen, you've already hit your 80 points. We're going to give you an incentive that rather than stay on another 3 or 4 or 5 or however many years you thought you were individually ready, there's an incentive to do it now.
And let us bring this back to the council in detail. We are looking at a variety of different ways. We just didn't have we have not been able to get the comments back from the retirement
system.
And
I'm worried
that
by going in much details we have, we're going to leave the impression that somehow there's this program ready to be implemented tomorrow.
We may not be able to bring it forward.
Yeah, there may be a gap between retirement system, whatever. They may come back and say, well, we have this one problem which precludes us from doing this.
Right.
But it's great to be thinking.
We're trying to think of a variety of different ways to help make this happen.
That helps the city and also benefits the employee, and we can lessen the blow and create some savings that we can then apply other areas.
Absolutely.
And I'd just like to put things in context, too. And I know there's a lot of there's a lot of thought as to what are these budget reductions and the process we've gone over through the last at least 2 years. We have two types of changes in the budget. Number one, last year, we went through a lot of organizational changes. We changed the way we do things. And those will be forever, I hope. I hope that by creating some efficiencies, that we'll be able to, even when the economy recovers, we'll be able to continue on that way of doing business. And even this year, we've got a few things where we're changing the way we do things. There are other things that are directly related to our reality, and that is that we only have so much money, and we have to accomplish certain items, which means we've basically taken a temporary position that we have got to lower, reduce the level of service, and we hope it's temporary. You know, it's not something that even in a streamlining of government or getting out of businesses that we shouldn't be in or service we shouldn't be in, these are different. And I think we're down, you might want to say we're down to the bone. We're scraping on the bone now. And I know it doesn't lessen the blow to those that are affected by this, but there are some things that we just have to realize that we're holding on. We're in a survival mode. We're in a maintenance mode for the next year, two, three, until hopefully the economy recovers to the point where we can restore those services or bring them up to the minimum level that I think our citizens deserve. So we have these two things playing out. And I think it's easy to think that since we've decided in this year to change funding on a certain service, that somehow we are abandoning that forever. In some cases, that may be the case, and they probably should be abandoned. But there's many other situations where I hope we look at things as temporary in nature, because there are certain things we're doing now that I don't think anyone's happy with, that go below our minimums. And we'll get through this. But that's the world we live in. That's where we are right now. And whether it be next year or the year after, we hopefully can get back to that minimum level, but with a model that is streamlined, with a model that is more efficient, with a model that can provide even a higher level of services using fewer resources. So I know I get a lot of questions. People, well, you've ruined this forever. Well, hopefully not. Or you've changed this forever. Yeah, we did. And that's good. And there's a combination of these two. And sometimes it's hard to realize that there really are a couple different things going on here. So that's my soapbox for the day. Is that okay?
Yeah, okay. Mayor.
I'm the mayor. Any other questions or comments? Great. Thank you. So what we'll do, just once again to recast the time frame, we will have until
really June 7th,
another 3 weeks, until we adopt the tentative budget. And that's the maximum budget.
Yes.
That's by law, that'll be the budget, the do not exceed budget. So 3 weeks, if we have some of these other tweaks or issues or whatever, council, please bring it to staff's attention, hopefully over the next week, so we can then be working on them.
We don't want to be doing it the day of June 7th.
Well, because June 7th, that's too
probably late. In the next 2 weeks, and probably next two Thursdays, I think would probably be helpful.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We haven't gotten there yet. Acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. Public safety. Got a motion by Councilmember Summers, second by Vice Mayor. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Motion is approved. Hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Do we have any reports?
You want to do EVIT?
Yeah, I will do EVIT. Councilmember Summers and Richens and I had the opportunity to
Kavanaugh.
Oh, that's right. Dennis was there also. Had the opportunity to attend what would you call that?
Grand opening
ribbon cutting.
Center.
Yeah, the Health Sciences Center. The Veterans Administration has approved EVIT as their primary training site for their sterile processing. I guess I shouldn't have given this report. You guys know a lot better than I do.
And you spoke.
And I spoke. And during my speech, the flag fell over and somebody fainted. And I knew I was a bad speaker. I didn't realize I was that bad. But it's actually is pretty exciting. The Veterans Administration is putting in almost $1.5 million investment into this facility, $350,000 in the facility itself, and over $1 million of equipment. And it's just so happened that on that same day or the day before and that day, there was a series in the newspaper about how many deaths there are in hospitals from infections. Mm. And a lot of that, it has to do with sterilization processes. So it's one of the major killers in our hospitals is infections that people gain while they're in the hospital, and especially during surgery. So this program, what it does, it teaches health professionals sterilization protocol and procedures that hopefully make our hospitals safer. And so it's a real coup for EVIT. Congratulations to Dr. Sally Downey and her staff. Congressman Mitchell was there with us to help kick this off. And I think that's going to be up and running by the fall semester. They're taking applications for students now, and it will train both students, normal EVIT students, and also have a postgraduate or an adult program that they will train existing healthcare workers. So, you know, I just can't say enough about what a gem EVIT is in our community. Serves 11 school districts. Started here in Mesa as Mesa Votech, and then morphed into the East Valley Institute of Technology. And it's just an incredible asset. And they will also be breaking ground on a branch campus out at the Gateway, hopefully within a couple months, if they can get there. It's not our gas line, but it's another gas line. If they can get Kinder Morgan to agree with them on movement of a gas line, they'll get that. And that's, if you don't know anything about EVIT or haven't visited out there on West Main, it's quite a treat. And there's a lot of good stuff going on out there. So kudos to them. Councilmember Summers.
Thank you, Mayor. In addition to that, on Monday, Councilmember Higgins and I had a private briefing with the commander of the Superstition Springs precinct to review crime stats. And despite many challenges that they face because of critical shortages, particularly, by the way, Chris, cars seems to be an issue, as you're like probably that. Aware.
Yeah, my wife got her stolen GPS.
Yeah, license. Well, no. They're short of police cars.
Those weren't the ones we cut.
We haven't cut the cars. The crime stats overwhelmingly are lower now. So they're doing a fantastic job still with the crime stat program that they're dealing with. So I'm happy to report that East Mesa is doing very well. And thank you to all the officers and the hard work that you do.
Councilman Finner, you want to talk about the Public Safety Foundation?
Sure. Thanks, Mayor. Yesterday morning, we recognized the men and women of the Mesa Police and Fire Departments for heroic activities put on by the Mesa Public Safety Foundation, an organization of business people in the community that have spent the last 20-plus years recognizing those folks. Just some amazing stories, life-saving events, officers shot in the line of duty, I know there's a great appreciation from this council and from the business community and all those that support for our public safety personnel and the dangers they go through. So thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Councilman Richens.
Yesterday, the city of Mesa hosted a meeting of sustainability type officers from around the valley. ASU has created something called the Sustainable Cities Network. We had people from all over the valley to hear a couple of different speakers to talk about code changes and sustainability and the ramifications of some of those code changes. And Mayor and I both had an opportunity to speak to those folks. It was a very well attended. We hosted at the Mesa Arts Center on the Piper Theater stage, which was a really cool venue. Everybody was really wowed by the Art Center as they were in there, and hopefully they'll come back. Thanks.
Thank you. Vice Mayor.
Yeah, it was my privilege, too, to go to our subway right here in downtown Mesa, who was recognized as the top producing store in the state of over 400 plus subway outlets. They're the number one, and so go down and see the big trophy sitting on their counter.
Yeah.
They're recognized for that. That's really quite an accomplishment out of so many stores to be the number one. Saturday I went down to on 734 East Broadway, Lombardo's Gelato. They were celebrating a year in business and had some customers who actually put on a celebration for them. And it was very good homemade gelato. I encourage others to give it a try. So congratulations to them.
Thank you. Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, last Friday night, the group that puts on Friday night events, it was the second Friday last week, or was it the first Friday last week?
First Friday. So Motorcycles on Main.
It was Motorcycles on Main, and there were almost 4,000 people here downtown, 1,400 motorcycles. And if it is an event you haven't gotten to, you have to put it on your calendar and come next month.
Well, second Friday is tomorrow.
Okay, so then that was the first Friday, Motorcycles on Main.
Tomorrow night is Imp Fest.
Yes, another.
IMP Fest.
Which means what, Mayor?
Music.
It's something about music. I can't remember. That's an acronym.
It's Independent Music Producers.
That's what it is. So there's a lot. They're setting up like ten bands on 4, 5, 6 stages. Main Street once again will be closed. And thank you to city staff for responding and not. Yeah, I'm not going to make a comment about that. But go ahead. It's a great place to be on a Friday night downtown. Mr. Brady.
Just a reminder, we have a Public Safety Committee meeting Monday the 17th, and that will be followed by the study session and the council meeting. Thank you.
Okay. I have one thing. This year, the Mayor's Youth Summer of Service, this is a new initiative that we have. Very exciting initiative, doing in conjunction with the VISTA program that the Mesa United Way is running. And we have, throughout the summer, service opportunities for youth. Registration begins May 17th. And just a example, on June 2nd, youth on a planned service project are going to be out at the Mesa Cemetery. On June 8th, United Food Bank. June 16th, Serine Adult Daycare Center. These are usually 3 to 5 hour service projects. There will be supervision. They're planned. Great activity for youth, a great way to keep your kids busy in the summer, but also to teach them how to work as team in teams, and also how to give great service to the community. As I said, you know, you've got all sorts of different activities and places of need, and that's the 2010 Mayor's Youth Summer of Service. It's for all youth ages 14 to 17. They can go online to mesaaz.gov/volunteer. Registration begins May 17th and will continue up through the individual events. So just wanted to make you aware of that. If you have any other questions, you may call my chief of staff, Kathy McDonald. So we're really excited about this. This is a great new initiative. Okay. We have one item. One request to speak from a member of the audience, and normally during study sessions we don't take comments on specific agenda items, but we do allow people to speak during the citizens present. So is Larry Cloud, are you still here?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Cloud, if you'd like to come up. And please take 3 minutes, just have a seat anywhere in there. And
good morning, Mayor Smith, council members. My name's Larry Cloud. I'm a citizen of Mesa City. I've relocated here from California, where I retired from the fire service after 31 years. 11 of those years were as a battalion chief working out on the line. And when I came to Mesa, I got involved in other public service avenues and discovered the many volunteer programs that the city of Mesa has, and got involved with the fire department here working in connectors. Also through the fire and life safety office with the social service office, the community response team that goes out on the death calls, home safety inspections, and various other things. I've been following the budget process over the last months and been paying attention to what's going on with the fire service. I should say at the outset, I don't have permission from the fire department to speak to you today, and this is not in their behest or at their asking. I'm actually here because I'm a citizen, and I've noticed as a member of these volunteer programs that there's a good deal of efficiency to be found with those, because when fire engines, fire companies are sitting out on calls, for instance, the social service part of the fire and life safety office, people that are in desperate straits oftentimes call 911 over and over again. Oftentimes, We go out to help intervene with these people that have called the department dozens of times. They don't need a fire truck or a fire engine to be responding to them. They have other issues that need to be addressed. And the social service office, part of the fire and life safety, through the expertise of their manager, the program is able to address those issues in a way that can get these people connected to other resources, whether they're community, state, federal, so that they can get taken off of this process where they're continually calling fire engines to come out and respond and to help them in that way. I work, in fact, today I have the uniform on because I'm a member of that team and we respond. Typically, I work Tuesdays and Thursdays, and we go on 4 or 5 or 6 calls that have come in from engine companies that have identified people that are at risk. We go out and address those things 4, 5, 6 times during that day, try to get these people connected with other things that can help. That's an efficiency thing for the city, which I would like for the city to take into account when the other issues here down the road with budget processes, when we talk about saving money. One of those things is to not have a police officer or fire engine sitting out here for hours and hours or responding out over and over and over again for people that don't need the fire service. And those people are then free to do other kinds of things that they're trained and equipped to do. As a former battalion chief and a member of a person that
person that goes on, has been on thousands of these calls, I know how important that is to the fire service. And you go out and ask any fire captain about getting up at 3:30 in the morning for the 15th or 20th time to go out to the same person that's had an issue that really can't be addressed through the fire service. They love to have a resource like their social service officer and their person that can go out and take care of those things. And I guarantee you when they get back, the first thing they do is sit down at the desk and write a feedback follow-up form to Ms. Mapes to go out there and talk to those people so that they can get that taken care of. Also in the CRT program, I've noticed that when I go to a call, and typically that call lasts from 2 to sometimes 4 hours by the time we get the deceased off the scene and whatnot. As soon as I get there, the fire service and the police department is gone. They're back on duty. So those are really important things, I think, for people to take into account when they talk about budgets and efficiencies in addressing those kinds of things. They look at people, and especially the expertise of the people that are involved in the connector program and the social service program. Ms. Mapes, for instance, has multiple advanced degrees. When she goes out, she's got 15 to 20 years that she's laying on the line in these people's living room, and she's telling them, well, okay, let's get you hooked up with these people. Let me get this person on the phone. And she's able to do things that are mean something to these people that are in desperate straits. They're addressing their issue right there. And you can't replace those kinds of people with just having someone else do their job. It just doesn't work. Those people do not have that kind of expertise. So, in closing, I just want to encourage the council, as the time comes for deciding these final cuts and whatnot, I understand the money being what it is, please take into account that you've got some excellent volunteer programs out there in the fire service in particular that save the city certainly thousands and thousands of dollars, and just as importantly, address the needs of those taxpayers out there that are getting out. I wish in Sacramento County and in California where I worked, I wish we had these kinds of programs. My department had 35 stations, 540 sworn firefighters, and we went on lots and lots of calls. And as the battalion chief, I can tell you, I was the guy where the buck stopped for those kinds of calls. We didn't have someone else to, with the kind of expertise that you guys have in the city here, to address those kinds of situations. So the taxpayers here really are getting an outstanding service. And I hope you'll take that into account when the time comes to make decisions about those people and those programs, because I think they're doing a great deal of good for the folks out there that that are taxpayers in the community.
Larry, thank you so very much. You're welcome, sir. And I guarantee we will.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. And thank you for your service. We really do appreciate the volunteers in all the city, and especially in our public safety, our incredible service. And as you said, an incredible benefit to our community. So thank you so very much.
Thanks, sir.
Appreciate that. Okay. Any other requests to speak, Mr. Crockett?
No, Mayor.
Okay. Entertain a motion to move into executive session. Have one from the Vice Mayor, Second Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're now moving into executive session. Thank you very much.